Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Marco Marquez, now joined by Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Hello, Jesse. How are you?
Good, Stephen. Glad you another Billy Joel truther here with me. Oh, no. I'm glad. This is great.
Let me tell you. I mean, ever since I was a kid, old enough to listen to music, my mom had certain artists that she... I didn't have a choice, you know. It was Elvis, Billy Joel, Neil Diamond, and my dad would follow those, and then I'd go be with my dad, and that would be Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, the Reverend Al Green, and so I was blessed. I had parents listen to some pretty good music, and so it stuck with me. But like Billy Joel, as long as I can remember, every time he'd come to concert, somehow, some way, me and my mom would end up at that concert. And I love Billy Joel. I love Billy Joel.
That's awesome. You know, I was going to say, I think the Stormfront cassette got stuck in our van.
Yeah.
My mom was big Billy Joel. And so, yeah, we went to that concert at a Kaufman. That was awesome.
Wasn't it great?
Front Center, that was awesome. And to be able to do that was really cool. But I heard you on the way in. And I was like, oh, yeah. Let's talk Billy Joel.
Yeah, Nate loves Billy Joel as well. So we'll include him in this group. And then we'll cut his mic off. But okay, so I always want to ask you about other stuff. I know we got to get to the Chiefs, but I would like to ask you, and if you don't have anything to say, feel free to tell me. There's been a lot of talk about this article at The Athletic from Andy McCullough and Rustin Dodd and Alec Lewis, and then there was a lot of talk from Dayton Moore in response to it, and then J.J. Piccolo, another podcast with the people at the Kansas City Star, and he had his comments to say. But fans are so there's a lot. Look, there was no talk about the Royals until this, and now there's people talking about the Royals, but it's not exactly good. I'm just curious, do you have any takeaway from this as you look at this? You've covered the Royals, you embrace analytics, you understand it, you get it, but I'm just curious if you have any opinion on what's going on right now with everything that's being said. It's like a big tornado of words going everywhere.
Yeah, that sometimes happens. So I think all sides here, I sort of understand a little bit, especially the fans that are frustrated, because this was kind of pointed to the year where it'd be, hey, maybe not 500, but you turn the corner, you get close to playoff contention, next year to be the year. Having said all that, I think the most positive thing that happened for the Royals this year is they got all those hitters up, and they seem to have a real hitter development department right now with Alex Zumwalt. And that's the sort of thing that makes you encouraged not just about this year, but about the next year and the year after that. And they've got so many rookies. Those guys are all going to be kind of like, you know, 2012, kind of grow up together and have this little wave of talent. So
Nate Eaton, stolen bases in 4 straight games, rotisserie sleeper.
Somebody picked him up earlier at the All-Star break when they called those guys up because of the COVID. I was like, man, is he really going to make a contribution?
And, hell yes.
Sure enough, he did and is making a contribution. Having said all that, I mean, the thing that makes you very encouraged about the hitting is the thing that makes you very pessimistic about the hitting or about the pitching. And so, listen, if you're the Royals and in the front office, if you're not taking a deep, hard look at what is going on with the pitching with as much resources and draft picks and everything you've thrown at this, then you're not doing your job. So I think, you know, for me to be super optimistic about the Royals, I would have to think that you would want to have the pitching side sort of head in the same direction as what the hitting side is headed in. And so if you are going to basically put your head in the sand and say you're still optimistic about what's happening, or that things don't need to change, or that the status quo is just fine, then that would make me very pessimistic about the Royals. But I do think from talking to people up there that there is an awareness, understanding that this has got to be better. And I think some of J.J. Piccolo's comments have kind of spoken to that, where, you know, they have to figure this out because there is no other option for the regime if they don't figure it out. So if you're not willing to change, if you're not willing to embrace change, obviously you're not going to be in this business very long. A lot of the people in the front office have been there a long time, so I think that speaks to their ability to do that. But the pitching needs to speed up, and to me, that means off-season changes immediately and probably a tearing down of sorts to get this thing headed in the right direction.
And I agree with you, and I thought J.J. Piccolo said the right things, but it's like when Dayton Moore says, we're not disappointed one bit. Really?
Yeah.
Why aren't you?
Yeah. And, I mean, I want to be totally honest with you. I did not hear the comments, so a lot of times I want to make sure I get the context correct. I just sort of read them online. Some of this, I think, can be posturing, because I think sometimes what Dayton thinks is he always wants to put support behind his players, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, you always want to back
and
up
people,
those guys.
His coaches, everybody.
Whoa, yeah, absolutely, Nate.
You just scared the hell out of Jesse Newell, by the way. He's
a voice from the heavens.
He was looking out there on the balcony. He didn't know what's going on.
No, that was great. No, but I mean, I think that there is definitely an element of that. You know, you see this, like, to use a separate example, like with Andy Reid last year after the Cincinnati game. What did we hear from Andy Reid? It's my fault. I should have called different plays. It's my fault. You'd ask him about Patrick Mahomes, a play at the end of the first half. It's my fault. It's my fault. You hear him say very specific things because he doesn't throw his players under the bus. It's very intentional what he does and what he says, because that's how you get the reputation of being a player's coach or somebody that people want to play for, is that you don't, you know, you don't have the Cliff Kingsbury, well, I had him call plays because I wanted him to see how tough it is. You know, like you don't want that garbage. You want to have things continue to move along. And so I think with Dayton, and again, Dayton's very intentional with what he says. I think part of that, and Nate, I'd love to hear from you on this as well, just because I think that a part of going into that is continuing to have faith in his people and his players. And whether that seems foolhardy or not, or foolish when you read the quote or not, I think it's just a continuing. We know Dayton Moore's greatest strength as a leader. It's his loyalty. You know what I mean? Like that's what they built the last championship on, and that's what he is. I mean, if you want to say to a fault, it is what he is to a fault. And so to me, that quote more reflects him and sort of what he does and who he is, which is he still believes in his players, he still believes in his staff. Now, that doesn't mean that changes don't need to happen or they don't need to make some tough decisions, but to me, that quote more reflected sort of that part of his personality rather than something else.
And he's a fighter. So people that are loyal, that are fighters, if they feel like their people are under attack, they're going to kind of lash out. They're going to be a little defiant, you know. And I think that's what you're seeing there from Dayton, is a defiance, you know. And here's the problem, because I think everything you said is spot on, Jesse. I think the problem, the conundrum that Dayton Moore finds himself in, is at least according to this article, and I don't believe that Rustin Dodd or Andy McCullough or Alec Lewis are guys with agendas. I really don't. I believe we've known Rustin for a long time, been a good guy on our show. I think he's willing to write things that are tough, but I think he tries his very best to be fair. And that article paints a picture of a group where the players and the staff don't necessarily see eye to eye as a whole. Now, there's a lot of different individuals involved, so you might find a picture here or there that's like, oh, no, this organization's great. They're doing it the right way. But they're painting a picture of at least a group of pitchers who don't think that that Dayton Moore's people have been doing things the best way. And so Dayton then it's almost like, okay, I want to support my players and I want to support my people, but those two are at odds. What do I do? And I don't think, you know, I don't think he's going to confront that publicly. I don't think he wants to hear that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's news he wants to hear, because he believes that they should all be working in concert and supporting each other and believing each other. And I think that's why they've got – and I think that was the whole point of the articles. They got a problem on their hands, whether it's because they need different players that are going to buy in, or they need a different system that the players will buy into. They got to figure that out.
No, I'd agree. I think the problem is if you don't embrace or accept that there's a problem. And that's right. what the article right. brings forward. I will agree with you as well. I read the card. Remember, Stephen, we were sitting here when the article came out mm-hmm. last week on Thursday. And so I was kind of expecting bombshells and different things. And listen, when these stories happen, I can tell you from being on this side of it, it's not easy conversations to go to Dayton Moore, J.J. Piccolo, and go, hey, this is what we're about to write. We need to talk to you. We have some tough questions. But as you mentioned, all those guys did that. Those comments were in there. And the Royals, this was not blindside. This is not blindside them. Like, they knew this was coming. They had a chance to address what there was. And so, yeah, I think under the surface, this has sort of been bubbling a little bit. And again, it's if you're going to give credit to the Royals for their hitting department, which they absolutely deserve credit for their hitting department and what's happened this year, if you look at the pitching and the resources they've given, you have to question that and what's going on. And I think the fear here is, and Nate, you know this, I mean, with what's happening nowadays with the Dodgers and with the Giants and them turning pumpkins into pitchers seemingly every year, I mean, if you are 5 or 10 years behind right now, I mean, where are you going to be at in 5 years if you don't, you know, approach this and embrace that you need to do something different? And that, to me, is you know, we can talk Cal Eldred all day. Cal Eldred is just a tiny, tiny part of what's going on organizationally with the Royals, whether they're throwing the right pitches, whether they understand pitch tunneling and pitch shaping and the newest technology that can help you out with all of that sort of stuff. And so, again, if the Dodgers, with their resources, are already 5 years ahead of you, that's something you got to face head on right now before it becomes them being 10, 15, 20 years ahead of you, and there's no way that you can catch up, especially with the limited resources you have. So, I think it's fine if you look at the article and you read it and you understand that there's a place that needs to get to, the Royals need to get to very soon to kind of catch up with the hitting. But it's bad if, like you said, Nate, if it's more, you guys are attacking or this article isn't fair, or that's not the way it should be taken. It should be taken the way it is, which is there are some major cracks right now in the Royals pitching foundation, and those need to be fixed right away.
We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star here. Okay, what's your reaction to the length of the suspension for Willie Gay, 4 games?
Yeah, so I thought Sam McDowell, my colleague at the Star, wrote a great piece on this. I'd encourage people to check it out from yesterday, because this is sort of how the NFL rolls with this stuff. You know, we would love for them to be more public, for them to understand better what they found in the Willie Gay situation, what warrants the 4 games. And I know there's obviously the comparisons to Deshaun Watson and everything. Let me just say, you know, we had previous articles from whether it was the 911 call, whether it was court documents kind of, you know, talking about this and what happened in this incident. And Sam wrote this, and I totally agree with it. I mean, this is, I keep hearing it's a vacuum cleaner. This is way more than a vacuum cleaner, guys.
Right.
I mean, it absolutely is. This was a domestic, basically a call out to check on domestic violence, domestic abuse, that sort of thing. And there are some details, you know, that we document in the Kansas City Star that speak more to that. Now, again, we all wish there was more transparency of the process, because potentially the NFL, what happened was they don't have to go through a jury. They don't have to go through what a prosecutor has to go through to try a case, potentially, which is why this ended up in a diversion agreement. But instead, kind of like when we talk about KU and the IRP, where the burden of proof is lower, the IRP can say, well, you can get all your lawyers involved if you want, KU, but we pretty much think we know what happened here. And that's why, you know, there was kind of fear that there could be, you know, major punishments, and that thing is still not settled, obviously. But that could be where the NFL was with this, where, you know, okay, maybe a court of law or a prosecutor cannot nail down every detail or think that they have a case with this. The NFL can go, we understand the details from what happened here, and we can punish you accordingly because you signed up to be part of the NFL, and obviously protecting the shield is part of what this policy does. So I don't want to speak like I have all the details. Obviously, again, we can go back in the Kansas City Star and read some of the court documents and things that happened with this case. It's much more than vacuum cleaner, and obviously domestic violence needs to be taken seriously. And we've heard from Willie Gay since then. It sure sounds like his life has changed around since then. He's talked about being a different person. You hope for his sake, for his family's sake, that that is the case and that he has turned a corner with that. But I think the unfortunate part is kind of what Sam wrote about, which is the transparency is not there. So we're sort of left guessing. And left guessing is a bad spot because obviously people are going to go to their separate corners like we do in all, you know, discussions when it comes to whether you're a fan or not a fan, where you live, all those sorts of things. So, I mean, the thing we do know is the Chiefs are going to miss him for these next four games. They don't really have a great replacement for him. And so this very much could impact the team. But the timing of it and the length of it, we don't have much transparency there. So I guess we're just sort of left to keep guessing. And that might be the way the NFL likes it.
Nate Buchiti, any comments?
Well, one of the things about the NFL, in addition to the lack of transparency, is it seems to be somewhat reactionary, right? What they did with Ray Rice before and after the video, it's like once the video came out and there was public backlash, they changed things. They went to an arbitrator for Deshaun Watson when the arbitrator didn't give him as much of a suspension as the public outcried for. They went back and they decided not to go with the arbitrator that they had hired, right, and changed that decision. And I'm curious. I know Sam Brote, you know, mentioned this briefly in his article, and this is a guess. Jesse, you're right. We don't know the details on this, but, man, I thought the NFL and the Buffalo Bills looked really bad with this punter situation in Buffalo. When you went and read the police report behind that whole story, you're just like, okay, somebody had to have read that thing, you know? And when you read it, it was just horrific. And so I wonder if it's not another, like, look, we got to react to these things. And yeah, maybe the details that are out on the Willie Gay thing don't look as bad on the surface as people think, but we know more details and we better be out in front, give this a legitimate suspension just in case those details ever come out. That's just kind of the way I wonder, Jesse, if that stuff doesn't play into their decision making a little bit.
It definitely could. And again, it's sort of, when you look at it that way, Nate, which is I think a good way to look at it. It's kind of darned if you do, darned if you don't, right? Because if the details do come out, or additional details do come out, and then they say, well, the NFL knew this, but they didn't do anything about it, then they look bad. But right now, when there are sort of, again, I say sparse details, we have the court records and, you know, certain court records that kind of talk about what happened at the Willie Gay incident. You know, I can kind of scroll through here, but his ex-partner accused him of pushing her on their couch where their three-month-old baby slept, hurling a vacuum across the room, hanging up on police while they're being dispatched. That was according to a petition for a protective order that she had filed. So again, I mean, that's more than a vacuum, and that is, you know, that's why the simplification of this, I don't think, holds water. I don't want to listen to people, oh, well, you know, 4 games for a vacuum, 11 games for, you know, Deshaun Watson doing what he did. They're not equivalent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's not it. And you know what else? You know what else, Jesse? The problem with that is that the ugly truth is people make their decision on what a fair suspension is based on what color uniform the guy's wearing.
Is it your guy or not your guy? Yeah.
Yeah. The people that are rushing to outrage that Willie Gay's getting too much are Chiefs fans. If he played for another team, they wouldn't be griping about it, you know. And so to me, like, that's an ugly part of it, because stories like this are bigger. And look, the NFL, like you said, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't as well, because in public circles, they're expected to act more aggressively towards these guys than the government and the court system is, you know. I mean, because these are hard cases. You know, like Deshaun Watson is not facing a criminal case. The allegations are terrible. So the league's expected to do something about it. But, you know, but the criminal system's not expected to do anything about it because they can't prove it, or they don't feel like there's enough. You know, I mean, so that's why the NFL is just, they're in an absolutely winless position on this.
Yeah, and real quick, Nate, I mean, I just want to read from this, because, again, this is from our article back in January and from the protective order. Straight from article, the woman claimed Gay then pushed her onto the couch where their son was asleep, cracked her cell phone, knocked everything off her countertops, and threw a vacuum 20 feet across the apartment, according to her petition. Gay stormed out of her apartment before police arrived. You know, you mentioned when it's on video, things, you know, sort of take on a more serious nature. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, mm-hmm. what's described here in the petition, and again, he signed a diversion agreement, so that the legal part has moved behind him. But again, if you're trying to imagine this and picture this, what if that was on video? What if that was something that was seen, that sort of thing? So it is difficult. And again, for the Chief's sake and for Willie Gay's sake and for his family's sake, you know, he talked over the summer about how he believes he's changed. He believes he's in a better place. You hope that for him and all that. But I think it is worth mentioning kind of the details from this, because we do have a tendency, I think, especially in today's world, where we get snippets of news to sort of oversimplify something that is pretty complicated. I think this case could be pretty complicated when you look at the NFL and what they're trying to do. And again, what they're trying to accomplish here by suspending Willie Gay and trying to send a message across the league.
We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in the studio. Back after this on WHB. Well, we know now the straw that breaks the camel's back. I don't know what this is about, but this is going to be very interesting. Nate Bucati, we just received a press release from the Royals. Royals Chairman and CEO John Sherman will be available at Kauffman Stadium this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Ooh, boy. I don't remember him speaking to the media publicly since he bought the team.
There you go. And away
which I think
we
is,
go.
Is good that he's much more behind the scenes.
You're like,
the
did
way.
You hear this, Jesse Newell on the Border Patrol? Set up, Millinger, set up a press conference. I don't even know.
That's it.
It's a terrible.
That's it.
Yeah. We've had it. We're going to answer some questions now. What do you think of that, Nate?
Well, I can't wait to hear from him. I mean,
no,
like
really,
I said,
for sure.
I don't remember him doing a media gathering since basically when he bought the team. And I, again, for the record, I think that's good. I would rather have ownership that's more. I think that Clark Hunt and the Illig family, they let their people go out and run the organization and speak for the organization. They're not like Jerry Jones, who's doing press conferences after every game. And I'm really, I think that's
games,
what you want.
Before games.
During games. I think that's what you
on
want.
On the sideline.
But I do think every once in a while, Clark Hunt will come out and speak a little bit.
But I want to hear. I can't wait. I want
to
hear from him.
I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Yeah, for sure.
Well, and again, it's speculation season, but if you had some sort of announcement, would you do it before and then do the press conference? Is this just an out of the blue thing, or is this tied to something? I'm just asking.
The way they were available this afternoon, or like, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's heard enough. Like, we want to hear what John Sherman has to say. You know, okay, well, let's do it. So
it's interesting.
I mean, I don't know what to expect, because I mean, you guys probably saw it. Jeffrey Flanagan was tweeting over the weekend saying there's going to be some changes, but not nearly as many as the. And he called them fair weather fans, which I thought was a little interesting.
Okay,
but
great.
Not as many changes as a lot of the fair weather fans would want to see. So what does that mean? Because usually Flanny's still pretty plugged in, I feel like, out there. So are there going to be big changes or little changes? And maybe that's what he's there to address today.
There we go. There's John Sherman to be available this afternoon at 2 o'clock press conference. We'll have all the good stuff right here on Sports Radio 18 WHB. All right, we talked about Willie Gay's suspension. How do the Chiefs replace him?
That's a good question. You're kind of torn here, aren't you? Because nobody really does what Willie Gay does, which is a linebacker who covers, you know, sideline to sideline, is good in the pass game, asked to do a lot, is really good athletically. They don't really have that fit on the roster. So you basically are going to have to make do. But sort of the question here is, like, do you move a bunch of guys around to get your best players on the field and or change your personnel packages a little bit? Or do you basically just plug and play and hope for the best with one of your backups? And so, you know, to do the least amount of jumbling, you could just leave Bolton a middle linebacker and bring in either Darius Harris or Elijah Lee as the new linebacker there. Again, those guys are not athletic what Willie Gay is, and you're going to suffer some. But you leave a linebacker on the field and your bigger personnel, and, you know, those guys have done that particular position in the past or in the preseason, so potentially just sort of trust them there. I guess the other thing you could do is, you know, you try to look at your best players on your roster and try to get your best players on the field. And right now, I think it's safe to say the Chiefs are probably deepest at safety. You know, if you're trying to get additional bodies on the field, whether it's Deion Bush or Brian Cook, we know Brian Cook is a physical player on the back end. You kind of open yourself up a little bit, you know, against the run game if you're having you're putting extra bodies in the back of the formation, which maybe is not the ideal thing for Jonathan Taylor coming up this week, and a Colts offense that has struggled already and only had him rush whatever it was 8 or 9 times this past week. So you can be sure at home and that they're going to be committed to run the football. But those are probably the two options, I would think. You either kind of plug and play a guy that's a backup and hold your breath and know that you know in 4 weeks you're going to get Willie Gay back, or you try to kind of maximize the depth of your roster and put more safeties on the field, as tricky as that might be. So we'll see how the Chiefs decide to play it, but that kind of seems to me like the two natural ways that they could potentially go.
Okay, so in the offseason, the Colts appeared to be they've been this way the last few seasons, a playoff quality roster in search of a quarterback. And it's gone from Phillip Rivers to Carson Wentz, and now to Matt Ryan. And it's early, it's only 2 games, but he looks like the gas tank is empty. You know, 1 touchdown, 4 interceptions. They got into a dogfight with the Texans and got a tie, and they just looked awful against the Jags and got shut out by Jacksonville. And so they're clearly not as good as people anticipated in the offseason. They can't be as bad as this, as dangerous to say, well, they're just terrible and the Chiefs are going to whack them, although I do think the Chiefs are going to win. And so what do you think of Indianapolis and what the Chiefs will be facing? This will be their home opener because they had the first 2 games on the road. Dangerous team that could be overlooked, or a team that has a quarterback that's done and the coach is in trouble and they're not nearly as good as we thought?
Yeah. I'm normally going to be the guy that just says, do not overreact to 1 week results. Think of the team more that you thought of them in the preseason than now. Sometimes these weird 1-game samples can lead you astray, all those sorts of things. I was just going to Football Outsiders. That was the worst offensive performance Indianapolis had in 30 years.
So,
I mean, we can talk like, oh, don't overreact to just, you know, this single game result. But yet when you do something so incredibly bad for 1 game, it's tough. And I watched some of the highlights from Ryan. Highlights is the wrong word, but you're right. Steven, did he like age 10 years overnight? I don't, some of those balls were just, he couldn't get them there. Like the arm strength was just not there.
It was terrible.
And you're right. I mean, they've been searching. Poor Andrew Luck has just put this whole team in sort of purgatory.
Unwilling to draft one, though. They've decided now 3 quarterbacks in a row.
Listen,
let's go, you know.
I don't know of any organizations who have refused to draft quarterbacks for a long period of time. You've never been around any teams like that.
I vaguely remember.
But no, you're right. I mean, it hasn't worked. And that seemed, you know, the Matt Ryan, like, odds to win MVP were surprisingly high this offseason, because if you look at the pieces around him, like, you know, we know Chris Ballard and all this stuff, like the roster isn't bad, you know, like they have Jonathan Taylor, they have the run game, the pieces look okay. I mean, they sure look like the favorite to win that division going into the year, just based off the other teams there. So I would normally tell you not overreact to 1 game sample, but Indianapolis was so bad offensively in that one that it is tough for me to not just say that the Chiefs should win this one going away. Now, again, the question mark is the question mark, which is the Willie Gay thing, and if Indianapolis can expose the Chiefs in certain ways on that end. But the defense looks a little bit undisciplined. They were, you know, biting on some play fakes and stuff. And listen, you give Andy Reid a couple extra days and his staff, you know, I'm kind of tempted to say that I haven't picked a prediction yet, but I might just pick the Chiefs going away in this one, just because this is not the Indianapolis I thought that they were going to be coming into the season.
Nate Bucati.
Yeah, the only way I could see the Colts keeping this close is just, it seems like when teams get throttled in 1 week, they come out and they have something to prove the next week, and they assert themselves physically. And if they can do that with their run game, because Jonathan Taylor only had 9 carries for 54 yards last week, then that's the one way to me they can maybe keep in this game. But if you're the Chiefs, you know that, right? Like, you're not really worried about Matt Ryan beating you deep downfield, I wouldn't think. So, I don't know. Like, isn't your number one priority if you're the Chiefs coming into this game to make sure that Jonathan Taylor doesn't have a huge day?
Yeah, and again, that's kind of the question we looping back to what we talked about with Willie Gay earlier, which is how do you do that? You know, how do you how do you stop that to get the other? And, you know, it is it's so interesting what we think of these teams coming into the season, and then it changes this much based on that performance. But, yeah, the Colts, I just expected more, you know? Like, you don't expect to have 30-year events in the first 2 weeks, and you don't expect Matt Ryan to look the way he did in the first game. So, yeah, the Chiefs had some struggles offensively in that game against the Chargers. We obviously saw that. We obviously saw that the receivers and the depth of receiving corps did not help them out in game two as much as it did game one. So that's something that needs to be fixed. They've got some extra time to do it. So, you know, it's a tough one because, like I said, I mean, I'm usually the guy that says, do not overreact, do not overreact. But this one's tough for me because the Colts, you talk about them coming back. And the one thing I did want to mention, that you talk about, hey, they seem to be fired up the week after. Remember the team that they just lost to this past week? The Jaguars was like their big loss last season at the end of the year. That's the one they wanted to avenge.
They lose every year down there.
And that was the one that kept them out of the playoffs. So, like, that's the game where they should have been motivated and fired up and spent their whole offseason saying.
Well, they should have been motivated after tying the Texans.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at some point, you are who you are. You know what I mean? You're trying to play well, and you just can't. So, yeah, they'll be fired to play the Chiefs, like you said, home opener, all those sorts of things. And having said all this, you know, talking about how I normally don't overreact, I'm doing it now. You know, maybe the Colts will pull off some crazy upset. But at this point, I just don't see it, just based off of the extra rest for the Chiefs and obviously the way the Colts looked last week.
And look, Jonathan Taylor is fantastic. He's terrific, right? But outside of that, I mean, Michael Pittman he's got upside, but he's battling injury. They think he's going to play on Sunday, but he left that game against Jacksonville with a quad injury, and so he's not going to be 100%. But when you look at that roster, besides Jonathan Taylor, the pass catchers, like who scares you there? And like Matt Ryan, he has to beat you with his arm. He ain't gonna do nothing with his legs, and his arm doesn't look the same. And so you take Jonathan Taylor away, and if Matt Ryan, is over the hill like we think, there's just not a lot on that roster offensively. The offensive line's solid, but it just doesn't scare you.
Yeah, well, and that's the question, too. How much of this, if they are successful getting the run game going, you know, how much of this changes? And let's be honest with the Chiefs. I mean, I know we're focused on the Colts right now. The Chiefs right now, we talked so much in this offseason, like how long is it going to take them to gel offensively? How long is it going to take Patrick Mahomes to be comfortable with Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdes-Scantling and for them to learn the blurry lines of the playbook and go in the places that he wants them to go and be on the same page, all those sorts of things, to kind of turn this back on the Chiefs a little bit? How many turnovers should they have had last week? I mean, I don't want to go all Pro Football Focus on everybody, but, you know, there were a couple times Mahomes should have been picked. And the first week, there was a couple times where fumbles happened and the Chiefs fell on him. And so they are playing a little bit on razor's edge here. And this is sort of what we expected going in because it's going to take some time in the offense. Some of this offense is built on chemistry, is built on guys working together. And that's why Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes were so dangerous. That's why Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes are so dangerous. They've been playing so long together, and they kind of have learned the ins and outs of what to do when they see a certain thing. They kind of are on the same page. I don't think the Chiefs have totally developed that yet offensively. So, again, if we're going to turn this back on the Chiefs, I don't think they're a finished product at this point. It was great for them to get that win against the Chargers when they didn't play their best and to start 2-0 and to be the top of the division. But I think there's at least question marks there. And then for the Chiefs, again, if we were going into the season saying what's one weakness the Chiefs probably are going to have, it would be stopping the run. They've done great in the first two games or good enough in the first two games. Is all of that fixed, especially all that fixed without Willie Gay? It's a question. It's a question going into this one, especially if they have to rearrange some of their personnel. So probably worth kind of viewing both sides of this and not just viewing the Chiefs as maybe the unstoppable force that they've been in past years. But again, I just told you, I still think the Chiefs are probably going to win by more than that 6.5. It's just a matter of kind of considering all these things and wondering if those could play into this, and maybe if we're having a different discussion next Thursday, what might have happened in this game that we didn't consider beforehand.
We've got Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in the studio back after this on WHP.
Slow down, you crazy child.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. So your pick is Chiefs to win.
I haven't picked them to cover yet this year. Seems like a good time.
Yep. Okay. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't anticipate doing this normally, but, you know, the quarterback is so important, and Matt Ryan has been so bad. So, like, I don't think you can fix that in a week. You add to it that the narrative has become the narrative for a reason now. The Chiefs got extra days to look at film and tendencies on Indianapolis. Some of the things I talked about, like them biting on some of the play-action stuff against the Jaguars, over-pursuing. I mean, that stuff, when you go back and look at film like Arizona, when the Chiefs had all that time to prepare, the Chiefs staff takes advantage of that stuff. Like, they pick on guys when they have time to figure out what they can do. And so it's tough to play in a short week. The Chiefs were able to win that game. You have almost like a half bye on this one, and you get to kind of pull out tendencies. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Chiefs big on this one.
All right, let's talk about some of the other teams that that the Chiefs are competing with in the AFC. Man, what was your takeaway from that comeback by the Dolphins over the Ravens?
Well, this is what we talked about in the offseason, where it's like both things can be true, right? Like Tyreek Hill can be really good and the Chiefs can be fine without him. I mean, that's sort of what you're looking at here. And it was funny, I saw kind of one of those Twitter poll questions out there. People are like, hey, if you could add one player to the Chiefs, who would it be? And like the first person that came to my mind was like Tyreek Hill, right? I mean, you're kind of thinking like, wow, that would be a crazy offense with Tyreek Hill. But I mean, obviously, McDaniel's just using that speed and they're getting creative with it. And amazing comeback by them. And we'll see if this turns Tua into a player, because I think there's some question about that coming in. But overall, yeah, that seems like a playoff team to me. We'll see what happens over this down the stretch. But both teams can still end up really good. I mean, think about this for the Chiefs. Their defense has been about league average so far. If you have a league average defense that is young and can only improve from here, and you have Patrick Mahomes, you probably got a pretty good team for the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, that was watching that game, and I go from at the beginning of that fourth quarter, I'm thinking, man, when I get back on the air, I'm going to have to talk about how we've kind of all overlooked Baltimore and still a contender. Yeah. I mean, and I'll be honest, Lamar Jackson's my quarterback for the competitive picks. He's putting up 50 points.
He had a
touchdown pass that was over 70 yards, a run of over 70 yards. They call back a quarterback sneak. They're doing all that. I'm thinking, and it looks like you got some nice pieces at wide receiver, and the defense is giving the Dolphins fits. And we got to include the Ravens in the discussion. And then an hour later, we got to include the Dolphins in the discussion, and the Ravens just fell apart. What the hell's wrong? I mean, so I don't know. That's just one game. I'm trying not to overreact. But what I saw in that fourth quarter was unbelievable. But they did a horrific job of obviously covering Tyreek Hill. But I was impressed with Tua. I know it's fun in Kansas City to try to bash Tua. Mm-hmm. But you got to give credit where it's due. He played his ass off in that fourth quarter. And the 1-2 punch of Hill and Waddle, who would you say is the best 1-2 punch of 1-2 wide receivers in the league? It might be them.
Yeah. I was trying to think.
Waddle's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And then Buffalo, they look by far the.
And this is the discussion. I remember talking about this last week, where it's like you don't have to have one or the other. If people are praising Buffalo and Josh Allen, that is not a direct slight to the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. I think you see that so far. Like, Buffalo's been on a different level so far. Doesn't mean the Chiefs can't beat them. Doesn't mean it won't be a great game when they play in a few weeks and/or in the playoffs again. But they look really good. I think probably the most encouraging thing for the Chiefs so far, right, is that the AFC West might not be as good as we thought.
And that was, I was going to ask you, is this too much of a hot takeaway after 2 weeks? But I feel like it's the Chiefs, Chargers, Gap, Broncos, Raiders, instead of this wild four-team race.
I think that is the most encouraging sign for the Chiefs, because you were looking at all those games and saying, hey, can they, you know, how many of those games can they win? To have that happen and then also bank a win against the Chargers. Again, when you don't play your best, when you had some big plays go for you, I think that's the best news for the Chiefs so far, is that this AFC West might not quite be the gauntlet that we expected going into the year.
That's Jesse Newell. Had a lot to talk about, my man. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Nate Bucati.
Thank you, guys.
That's the voice, Nate Bucati and Marco Marquez. Everyone have a great day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.